According to Mark Ebner, co-author of Hollywood Interrupted, when reporting on the Heidi Fleiss scandal, quote, "It was the Hollywood, the sex, the drugs. It was everything that makes a good story great. She was young and attractive in a loose cannon. But when you get down to what she was doing, it was no different than what a pimp does," end quote. Hey, what's happening? I am Tammy, and this is episode 20 of Women Committing Crimes. Welcome. It's great to have you here. And yes, today's episode is about Heidi Fleiss, the Hollywood madam, who she was back in 1993 when arrested in California for pandering, where she ended up, and who she is today. We will also take a brief look at the history of what turns out not to be the oldest profession, prostitution. But before we get to that, I want to do a quick update about Elizabeth Holmes. Last we chatted, her trial had been delayed until July this year, 2021. However, it's been delayed again due to Elizabeth now being pregnant. From TheGuardian.com, quote, "Lawyers for Holmes asked the judge on March 2nd to delay the start of jury selection to 31st of August after her due date. The parties have met and conferred, and both parties agree that, in light of this development, it is not feasible to begin the trial on July 13th, 2021, as currently scheduled," end quote. Interesting, right? Again, I'll let you know any updates as I hear them come in. I actually wasn't aware of this. I guess I should start checking. But listener David M. in Richardson, Texas, brought my attention to it. Thanks so much, David, for the update and listening to Women Committing Crimes podcast, which takes me to thanking all of you listeners. This podcast now has, at the time of this recording, 752 plays and an established audience of 40. I am so excited. It keeps going up. It's great. Also, we added the Czech Republic and Colombia to the listening audience. Thank you so much. Thanks for the emails and your suggestions and comments. The new website is up and running. Visit womencommittingcrimes.com. Again, all one word, just kind of like the email address, the Gmail address, only with .com instead of gmail.com or at gmail.com. So it's womencommittingcrimes.com. All the episodes are there, as well as pictures. I'm going to work on videos sometime, but definitely pictures. There's also a page for suggestions and a page listing all the women that I plan on talking about in future podcasts. Also, I'm still looking to do some bonus episodes. So if you have any ideas, put that in the suggestion for the bonus episodes. And also, as a reminder, I have a hashtag, #WomenCommittingCrimes. Check that out. Or you can just go to Twitter, @CrimesWomen. Or go to the Facebook group, Women Committing Crimes Podcast Group, and follow me, right? All right, right on. So let's get cracking on Hollywood Madam Heidi Fleiss. Heidi Lynn Fleiss was born on December 30th, 1965 in Los Angeles, California. Her father was Paul M. Fleiss, a pediatrician, and her mother was Alyssa. She had five siblings. That's a lot of kids. Three sisters and two brothers, one of which died in his 40s. I think he drowned or something. Heidi dropped out of school when she was 16 and earned her GED. She then spent a small amount of time each in Valley College and Santa Monica College. Didn't hear what she studied. Doesn't even matter. She worked for a short period of time as a waitress, then entered a relationship with movie and TV show director Ivan Nagy. I think it's Nagy. He's Hungarian. It's N-A-G-Y. I think there's an accent there that I can't type because I don't know how to do that on my computer. But anyway, this is gross to me, though, because she was like 22 and he was 49. Ugh. Anyway, Ivan Nagy directed episodes of like Chips, Starsky and Hutch, The Hitchhiker. Those were like old 70s shows. He also directed the movies, which I've never heard of, Bad Charleston Charlie, Skinner, and Deadly Hero. He's also a convicted bookie, so, but again, never heard of him, so. Either way, in 1988, Nagy introduced her to Madam Alex Adams, who was a madam who had million and billionaire clients, as well as celebrities and politicians. I couldn't confirm this, but I assume Nagy was a client. That's how he introduced his girlfriend, Heidi, to Madam X. I'll be doing a separate episode on Madam Alex. I said X before. I meant Alex, sorry. I'll be doing a separate episode on her later, because for the most part, from here on out, she has nothing to do with the story, so she might have trained Heidi, but that's about it. So we'll do a separate episode on her some other time. I do want to take a minute here to talk about prostitution, though, because a lot of people do say it's like the oldest profession, but it's not. There were professions before that. You know, people did it for free, maybe, but, you know, as far as, and as far as like it being, I guess maybe it could be the oldest profession. Maybe women and men were taking money for sex long before the first known prostitutes were on the books, but as it being like an actual career or a job, it's not the oldest, and we'll get to that in just a little bit. However, opinions vary about prostitution, and most times it is viewed through like a cultural lens, which usually has its roots in some kind of religion. But this next segment is, I'm going to just directly quote Britannica.com, which is the online version of Encyclopedia Britannica, for those of us who remember encyclopedias. But anyway, the online encyclopedia. It's just easier for me to do that. Again, this is a direct quote from Britannica.com. It's a little bit long, but it's very interesting if you've never known the history of prostitution, or, you know, this is still in a nutshell, and I figure it's really important to understand what the word institution was popping in my head, but, you know, there's people out there that would, you know, really be not happy with me saying that, but anyway, let me go ahead and read this. So, quote, prostitution, the practice of engaging in relatively indiscriminate sexual activity, in general with someone who is not a spouse or a friend, in exchange for immediate payment and money or other valuables. Prostitutes may be female or male or transgender, and prostitution may entail heterosexual or homosexual activity, but historically most prostitutes have been women and most clients men. Perception of prostitution, this is still the quote, right, are based on culturally determined values that differ between societies. In some societies, prostitutes have been viewed as members of a recognized profession. In others, they have been shunned, that word kills me, shunned, reviled and punished with stoning, imprisonment, and death. Few societies have exercised the same severity toward clients. Indeed, in many societies, clients suffer few, if any, legal repercussions. In some cultures, prostitution has been required of young girls as a rite of puberty or as a means of acquiring a dowry, and some religions have required prostitution of a certain class of priestesses. The ancient Greeks and Romans mandated that prostitutes wear distinctive dress and pay severe taxes. Hebrew law did not forbid prostitution, but confined the practice to foreign women. Among the ordinances laid down by Moses to regulate public health were several dealing with sexually transmitted diseases. In Europe during the Middle Ages, church leaders attempted to rehabilitate penitent prostitutes and fund their dowries. Nevertheless, prostitution flourished. It was not merely tolerated, but also protected, licensed, and regulated by law. And it constituted a considerable source of public revenue. Public brothels were established in large cities throughout Europe. At Toulouse, I think I'm saying that right, Toulouse, France, the profits were shared between the city and the university. In England, bordellos were originally licensed by the bishops of Winchester and subsequently by Parliament. Stricter controls were imposed during the 16th century in part because of the new sexual morality, I'll put that in air quotes, morality that accompanied the Protestant Reformation and the Counter-Reformation. Just as significant was the dramatic upsurge of sexually transmitted diseases. Go figure. Sporadic attempts were made to suppress brothels and even to introduce medical inspections, but such measures were to little avail. In the late 19th century, a variety of changes in Western societies revived efforts to suppress prostitution. With the rise of feminism, many came to regard male libertinism as a threat to women's status and physical health. Also influential was a new religious-based moralism, again, moralism in air quotes, in Protestant countries. Anti-prostitution campaigns flourished from the 1860s, often in association with temperance, that's not drinking, alcohol, and women's suffrage movements. International cooperation to end the traffic in women for the purpose of prostitution began in 1899. In 1921, the League of Nations established the Committee on the Traffic in Women and Children, and in 1949, the United Nations General Assembly adopted a convention for the suppression of prostitution. In the United States, prostitution was at best sporadically controlled until passage of the Federal Mann Act, M-A-N-N Act of 1910, which prohibited interstate transportation of women for, quote, and these are quoted within my quote, immoral purposes. Again, morality. By 1950, nearly all states had passed laws that banned brothels or regulated the profits of prostitution. After World War II, prostitution remained prohibited in most Western countries, though it was unofficially tolerated in some cities. Many law enforcement agencies became more concerned with regulating the crimes associated with the practice, especially acts of theft and robbery committed against clients. Authorities also intervened to prevent girls from being coerced into prostitution, white slavery. Prostitution is illegal in most of the United States, though it is lawful in some counties in Nevada. All right, so I just want to address something here. The theft and robbery committed against clients, what about the theft and robbery and beatings and murder of prostitutes? That's also something to think about, too. In most Asian and Middle Eastern countries, prostitution is illegal but widely tolerated. Again, this is quoting from Britannica.com. Among predominantly Muslim countries, Turkey has legalized prostitution and made it subject to a system of health checks for sex workers. And in Bangladesh, prostitution is notionally legal, but associated behaviors such as soliciting are prohibited. In some Asian countries, the involvement of children in prostitution has encouraged the growth of sex tourism by men from countries where such practices are illegal. That's part of the issue, too. Many Latin American countries tolerate prostitution but restrict associated activities. In Brazil, for example, brothels, pimping, and child exploitation are illegal. During the 1980s, attitudes towards prostitution changed radically through two major developments. One was the worldwide spread of AIDS, which increased concern about public health problems created by prostitution. In Africa especially, one factor in the rapid spread of AIDS was the prostitution industry serving migrant laborers. A second influential development was a renewal of feminist interests and the perspective that prostitution is both a consequence and a symptom of gender-based exploitation. Reflecting these shifting attitudes from the 1980s, the more neutral term sex worker was increasingly employed to describe those involved in commercial sex activities. It is difficult to generalize about the background or conditions of prostitutes because so much of what is known about them derives from studies of poorer and less privileged individuals, people who are more likely to come into contact with courts and official agencies. Much more is known about streetwalkers, for example, than about higher status women who can be more selective about their clients and work conditions. That would be Heidi right there, right? Based on available studies, though, it is reasonable to assert that female sex workers often are economically disadvantaged and lack skills and training to support themselves. Many are drawn at an early age into prostitution and associated crime, and drug dependency can be an aggravating factor. They frequently are managed by a male procurer or pimp or by a supervisor or madam in a house of prostitution. Health hazards to prostitutes include sexually transmitted diseases, some of which may be acquired through drug abuse. Male prostitution has received less public attention in most cultures. Heterosexual male prostitution, involving males hired by or for females, is rare. Homosexual male prostitution has probably existed in most societies, though only in the 20th century was it recognized as a major social phenomenon, and its prevalence increased during the late 20th and early 20th centuries. End quote. All right. So there's a whole lot there that gives you just an extremely brief history of prostitution. So many thoughts going on in there. The whole idea of morality, you know, religion. Come to find out, a lot of those religions were actually, including Christian ones, were partaking in prostitution. We all know that from, like, some of the downfalls of evangelical preachers in the 1980s and 1990s in the United States. I won't mention names this time around because some of those women we are going to circle back to for this podcast. But I just want to say, you know, Heidi is one of those madams, but selective as far as who her clients are, as well as who her working girls, who her sex workers, her prostitutes, her hoes are. All right, so I know that was a long quote. But it definitely explained prostitution much better than I could have, and I would have just butchered that and maybe put things out of context. So I wanted to make sure that it was understood exactly what we're talking about. Let me move on. So, like, the earliest recorded mention, I talked about this earlier, the earliest recorded mention of prostitution as an occupation is 2400 BCE in a temple brothel operated by Sumerian priests in the city of Uruk, Sumer, that's Mesopotamia, which is now the Middle East, around the Tigris-Euphrates rivers. And no, prostitution is not the oldest profession. Most historians say some sort of religious post, like priest, or even scribe, once writing was invented, which right now still most historians say was cuneiform in Sumer. So that would be more of the oldest professions. Anyway, back to Heidi. After meeting Madame X, remember she meets Madame X in 1988, Heidi becomes an escort herself, or a prostitute herself, so she could learn all the aspects of the business. Madame Alex's women were getting old, and she wanted Heidi to find young, attractive women to replace the old ones. Remember, Heidi met Madame Alex again in 1988, but by 1990, she replaced Madame Alex and ran the whole organization herself. Heidi later said she made her first million after only 4 months in the business. Not surprising. The women charged $1,500 a night, that's $2,800 in today's money, with Heidi getting a 40% cut. So she was raking in about $300,000 or $560,000 in today's money, a fucking week. Literally fucking, my joke. She has said, quote, I definitely say if you're going to live in LA, I don't see how you can do it better than I did, end quote. And, quote, if you're going to run an illegal business, you better be driving the best car, living in the biggest house, fucking the best looking people, and spending every dollar you make, because sooner or later, you're going to get caught, end quote. I'll be damned if she wasn't right, because in 1993, Heidi Fleiss was arrested and charged with 5 counts of pandering, which involves the practice of procuring, I can't say that word, a person to be used for or to travel for prostitution. It also includes inducing, encouraging, or forcing someone to engage in or continue to engage in prostitution. She was convicted on 3 counts and received a 3-year sentence, but her conviction was appealed, claiming that the jurors engaged in vote swapping to avoid a deadlock. All right, before I get back to that, I want to take a break here and say this podcast is brought to you by the podcast This Is Why You're Wrong with Stephen Everett, John DeBruin, and Alex Alcantar. In their podcast, they make lists about everything from like the best top 10 cuss words, which that was one of my favorites, to the best, let's see what their latest one is. All right, so their last one was top 10 Mario games. They have like top 10 names not used anymore. They have like top 10 presidents, top 10 serial killers, top 10 gods. Ooh, top 10 idioms. That one's interesting. So go check it out. It's a really a lot of fun to listen to. They also argue why their lists are superior. So see if it matches your list. Also, I want to thank Byron Alexander for allowing me to use his music at the beginning and end of this podcast. The song at the beginning is Very Well I Know. It's the instrumental version. And the song at the end is the instrumental version of Who. Both songs are on his fantastic album, Square One. I can't say enough good things about this album. It gets me jamming every time. Love to roll down the windows, pop open the sunroof, and kick on Who. It's a funky, awesome tune. You can find it on Amazon, Spotify, anywhere you can buy music, iTunes, that kind of stuff. Great album. I also want to thank Doug Chase, who designed the logos for this podcast, as well as the podcast Off Kilter No Filter. Off Kilter No Filter is a podcast with me and Byron Alexander. His music is featured on that one as well. And we discuss anything and everything, literally. We have episodes like our first apartments, our first cars. Please join us. It's a fabulous time. All right, back to the appeal. From the Los Angeles Times, 1995, quote, 3 jurors in the Heidi Fleiss case said in affidavits filed Thursday, this is 1995, that they agreed to trade votes on the Hollywood Madam's criminal sentence in an effort they mistakenly believed would lessen her jail time. The jurors' statements, filed in Superior Court as part of a prolonged effort by Fleiss's attorneys to win a new trial, echoed earlier claims by the lawyers that jurors broke the law by, quote, horse trading during deliberations. Another quote within a quote. Fleiss's attorneys claim that jurors were attempting to craft a lighter sentence, not voting solely on Fleiss's guilt or innocence on each charge, when they agreed to convict Fleiss of pandering while voting her not guilty of a drug-related charge. The jurors violated the court instructions by discussing Fleiss's possible punishment when deliberating her guilt, her attorneys say. Fleiss was convicted in December, again this is 1995, on 3 counts of pandering, which meant a mandatory prison sentence for more than 8 years. The jury deadlocked on 2 other pandering charges and acquitted Fleiss on a drug-related charge, which several jurors wrongly believed carried a heavier penalty. Sentencing is pending. Quote, the only reason I've, again, another quote in a quote, the only reason I voted guilty on the 3 pandering counts, juror Zina Alavi said in her affidavit, was because I discussed the penalty and potential punishment of Ms. Fleiss with other jurors, and I believe that by so voting, I could obtain a not guilty verdict on the narcotics offense. I agreed to and did trade my guilty vote on the pandering counts in exchange for a not guilty vote on the narcotics offense. The sworn declarations offered more detail into the stormy deliberation process. In earlier affidavits, Alavi and several other jurors admitted that they discussed the case outside the court. Fleiss's attorneys said Thursday's affidavits showed that jurors violated another rule that forbids them from bringing outside materials into the jury room. At one point during the deliberations, the 3 jurors said in their affidavits, another juror asked the bailiff for a dictionary to define several terms. After the bailiff declined, the juror looked the words up in a dictionary at home, wrote them down, and then communicated them to us the next day during deliberations, according to the declaration. One of Fleiss's attorneys, Donald Marks, will ask Superior Court Judge Judith Champagne for a new trial and a hearing next week. A sworn declaration from a 4th juror is expected to be filed today. The jurors have been granted limited immunity in exchange for more detailed accounts of their deliberations, end quote. So it worked, by the way. The verdict was overturned. So lucky her, right? However, in 1996, Heidi was convicted of tax evasion, just like Al Capone, and was sentenced to 7 years. She served 20 months at Federal Correctional Institute Dublin in California. She was then transferred to a halfway house in 1998, then released in 1999. So what happened then? Well, in 2005, she had plans to open a brothel with male prostitutes in Pahrump, Nevada. Those plans fell through. She then operated a coin laundry called Dirty Laundry. Then, in 2009, Heidi was treated for substance abuse at Pasadena Recovery Center. This was filmed for the third season of Celebrity Rehab. I never watched that. That's with Dr. Drew. Because reality shows are kind of icky to me, unless it's like building something, you know, like house shows, home garden stuff, or baking shows, of course, everybody loves. Or true crime, of course, because obviously I like true crime. But the Celebrity Rehab kind of things, Real World, that kind of stuff is ugh to me. But anyway, this show aired on VH1 from 2008 to 2011 with celebrities in recovery from all types of addictions. After 2011, it continued. I don't know for how long, it doesn't matter, but they did it without celebrities. And then I guess Dr. Drew said it felt icky, so he stopped. Took him that long to feel icky. Anyway, during filming, Heidi had left the recovery center and then got into a car accident high on prescription pills, of which she did not have a prescription for, not that it makes it better, but then she went back to rehab. In 2017, she owned the Flying S Ranch Ultralight Flight Park. Then she refurbished Airstream trailers and sold them on eBay. Then, in 2018, she bought a bird sanctuary in Nevada and is evidently very passionate about it today. Unfortunately, she is an admitted meth and Xanax addict, though. Also in 2019, she sued her now former friend, Elizabeth Keating. I guess it's Keating. It's got an end on it, an E on the end of it, and that looks weird, but I'm going to say Keating, for $4 million. Heidi had received an inheritance of about $400,000 and gave it to Elizabeth to invest in Bitcoin. And then when, you know, all the profits came in or whatever, supposedly Elizabeth did not give Heidi her money. Heidi wanted her money, and Elizabeth supposedly, according to Heidi, ran off with it. So the suit is still in courts today, so as far as I could tell. Heidi now is fairly philosophical about her life, though. In 2018, she spoke to Hollywood reporter Seth Abramovich and said, quote, "I feel like this. Everything in my life, even my fuck-ups, and there's been a ton of them, everything worked out right because it led to exactly where I am now," end quote. She's talking about her bird sanctuary. She really loves those macaws. So, she's a madam, so what? She gets busted, so what? Right? She does have the nickname Hollywood Madam, though, and there's a reason. Heidi had a little black book, although it wasn't really a little black book. It was actually a 28-page red Gucci book, but that's okay. But still, little black book, you know, is where people would write down all their lovers or whatever, right? Booty calls, whatever you write in a little black book. I don't have one. I don't know. But that's the traditional, you know, definition of little black book, right? So who were these people, though? You know, supposedly there were the rich and famous celebrities and politicians in this little black book, which is why everybody wanted to know who was in it. Charlie Sheen was a celebrity that was definitely in it for a fact, and he actually became a witness at her trial, where he said he spent $53,000 a year for Heidi's services. At the time of her arrest, well, later on she says actually he spent more, which, duh, you know, it's Charlie Sheen. At the time of her arrest, the reason why it came out that he was a client was at her arrest, and she had a bunch of traveler's checks that has his name on it because he had paid for services, right? So one celebrity must mean more, but she was not giving up who they were, right? She would never tell. In fact, that was what made the media circus so big, was because she wouldn't tell who it was. People were guessing. Names besides Charlie Sheen were like, you know, Johnny Depp and even George Lucas. All those people were, it was passed around, you know, that they were rumored to have been in her little black book. She said, though, quote, "There's a lot more thought that goes into the escort business than people realize. You have to learn how to make people feel secure in dealing with you," end quote. Even today, she refuses to say who her clients were. Quote, "It was something that seemed very private and personal. That was no one else's business. That's just how I feel about it today, and I always felt. I was offered a lot of money to sell that book, and there were times when I really needed that money, but that was something I would never do," end quote. So good for her, right? As far as prostitution goes, Heidi said, "I don't recommend prostitution as a career, but if someone wants to do it, let them do it," end quote. That's Heidi Fleiss, a woman committing crimes. Thanks so much for listening today. If you have a comment, question, or suggestion for an episode, remember, email me at womencommittingcrimes@gmail.com or comment on the website, womencommittingcrimes.com. I will even read your email or comments on the podcast, unless you would rather remain anonymous. If so, then make sure to express that in your email or your suggestions or whatever on the website. Please support this podcast. Go to anchor.fm/Elizabeth-Chase and click the support button. You can make a one-time donation or sponsor on a monthly basis. It would be greatly appreciated. I will be getting a Patreon for the website or something similar, whichever. I'll get a support button on that too. So keep visiting that and look for it soon. Please give this podcast 5 stars on Apple Podcasts as well. You know, do a review. Please let me know, you know, that you're listening. Please let people know what you think. Hopefully good. I'm assuming good. But, you know, if you have to warn people, whatever. Anyway, on the other podcasting sites, also give thumbs up. I'm on all of them, literally all of them, including iHeartRadio. Yay. So give us a fantastic rating, please. All right. So who do we do next week? Who are we going to talk about next week? Well, let's find out. Going into that fishbowl, right? All right. So let's take her out. Let's open her up. And it says, oh, Sandra Smith, South African. She's from South Africa, robbery and murder. I love a good robbery. All right, so I will talk to y'all later, and I will see you next week, or here, listen to you, talk to you. I will talk to you next week. Bye.